This is John Leo at the Manhattan Institute. I'm here today with Charles Murray, the author of Real Education, and before that, books like Losing Ground. Charles, you and David Gelernter of Yale struck the same note at the recent event at the Manhattan Institute's Day on Reflections about the Future University, and that note was that the university is getting obsolete.
It's getting obsolete very rapidly, probably within the next decade or two.
With what effect?
Well, I think it's going to be all to the good. The universities exist now. Undergraduate education, I'm talking about, is a evolved for reasons completely different than the functions it serves now. It used to be that it had an elite, that it was educating. It was a small fraction of the population. Now it's an instrument for mass education, post-secondary, and it doesn't work. It's inefficient and it's punishing in many ways.
Would you say that now it exists primarily to stigmatize people without BAs?
It's worked out that way, hasn't it? I mean, to say of someone that they only have a high school education these days is like saying you're a second class.
You're
citizen.
A loser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gets even worse because the elite universities then have they ratchet it up another step so that if you didn't go to a well-known university, then you're stigmatized.
But the point that you and David both made is that the university as it exists is no longer necessary because you don't have to have a gigantic library to support the students. You don't have to have a place where colleagues meet. Technology has moved beyond that. First of all, we have to worry what to do about the physical plant of the former universities, maybe monasteries. But how would distance learning work?
David Gelernter yesterday gave me some ideas I'd never even had before as he talked about the possibilities in the future. And I guess the difficulty of answering that question is indicated by comparing the BlackBerry or the iPhone you use now with the cell phone you used back in 1995. The technology is transforming so rapidly that I assume within a matter of years you can conduct classrooms with a professor sitting in San Jose and students scattered all over the country linked, looking on their computer screens at each other, and it's going to feel very much like an ordinary seminar in an ordinary room.
Right. You don't need a university or a system for that. Individual professors could set up their own courses, right?
Yeah.
What you need is someone to accredit it or test it. That's testing is a good theme in your book.
Yes. Certification is my battle cry now. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind certification is this. The BA doesn't mean a thing anymore all by itself. You got to know where the person went to school. You got to know what the major was. And you got to know the grades and all the rest of that. Certification is a way to give a young person who's willing to work hard and learn something, something he can take to an employer, which says, you know something. The CPA exam is the model. It should be the case that somebody can take accounting courses online, sit down and take that CPA exam, get a good score, and all at once that youngster can compete with somebody who went to the University of Virginia or whatever. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as we heard yesterday in the Manhattan Institute event, the gatekeepers now say, oh, you've got to have a college degree to sit for the CPA exam. That's not what I mean by certification.
No. Now, your book opens on the theme that let's leave some children behind. That doesn't sound popular to me, but explain that.
What is this irresistible impulse? The actual point I make there is that we have no choice but to leave some children behind in the sense you cannot bring everybody up to grade level if you have a meaningful definition of grade level in reading and math. So the title of one of the chapters is Half of the Children Are Below Average. Just to bring home to
people. That figures, of course.
Yes. And I want to bring that home to people that it's true of everything. It's true of charm. It's true of industriousness. It's true of mathematical skills, yes. It's also true of athletic skills. There are always people who don't do very well in certain things, and we become phobic about saying that out loud when it comes to academic skills.
But America is dedicated to a relentless egalitarianism. How are you going to erase that? We want everybody to come out even, don't we?
America in the last 20 years has been dedicated, last 30 or 40 years maybe, to a relentless egalitarianism. Before that, it was relentless pursuit of opportunity. Everybody should be able to make of themselves what they can be, and that's my theme. I think the goal of education ought to be recast. It is to bring every child to adulthood having discovered things that child enjoys doing and having learned how to do them well. Mm-hmm. And that will be different according to the configuration of talents they have.
And you favor taking much of what is supposedly taught in the university to the grade school elementary level.
Right.
How would you do that?
My hero here is E.D. Hirsch, the fellow who wrote the book Cultural Literacy back in the 1980s and has written many others since then. He has something called the Core Knowledge Curriculum, which goes from K to 8. That is just wonderful. It's ready to go. You can go online and see the outline of it. You can see what materials are necessary for it. So we have those kinds of curricula that are already developed. All we need to do is get rid of the PAP, the pablum, that we're teaching in the elementary schools now.
Explain who the educational romantics are.
The educational romantics are the people who say any child can be anything he wants to be if the schools do their jobs. Educational romantics are the people who gave us No Child Left Behind, mm-hmm. that says all the children will be above average. They are the people who try to treat children as if they are completely plastic, capable of anything if we only do our job right. Mm-hmm. It's scientifically idiotic, and I don't think anybody really believes it in their hearts of hearts, but you can't say that in public.
And the efforts to improve the scores of underprivileged children work temporarily, but not very long and not very much. Is that correct?
It's not so much underprivileged children. It's children with low intellectual skills. Mm-hmm. And here, the example I often use is when I took a speed reading course when I was in graduate school, and it really did its job. At the end of that course, I was reading a couple of thousand words a minute. It was a phenomenal change. Within 6 months, I was back to baseline. Mm-hmm. You can get practice effects and cramming effects and so forth, but we don't know how to take a child at the 10th percentile in ability and dramatically improve their performance.
How would you characterize reaction to your new book?
Very enthusiastic among everybody but the people who run public policy.
Yes.
I've got teachers, parents, students, emailing me, and very few negative ones. Just a handful of negative ones and a pile of people, particularly the professors, who start out by saying, I never thought I'd agree with you about anything, but this time you've got it right.
Well, we've been interviewing Charles Murray, author of Real Education, available everywhere. And thank you very much, Charles, for coming.
John, I've enjoyed it.
Bye.